Hello and welcome to today's show, where we will be chit-chatting about the 2015 movie Marvel's Avengers Age of Ultron. The gang finds themselves Von Strucker down thanks to Tony's meddling, but his cap interested as we scepter the scene for Civil War. Ultron claws his way to a vibranium cranium, but the Avengers get him maxim off their backs before his vision becomes a reality. Wow. As well, Hawkeye's big day out on the Quicksilver screen, but is his Bart in the right place? And finally, what does Hulk busting out of here to take a wander into outer space mean as the sun sets real low on Phase 2? All this and more on today's A Marvelous Lunch Break. Joining me as always is Miss Marvel herself, Anna Harrison. Oh my God.
I can't deliver these today.
I'm struggling. I don't know about you, but I'm feeling pretty full after the Easter break.
Oh, yeah. But full in body and spirit. Full of chocolate, obviously. But I've got to say, like, this was such a great rewatch for me. I'm feeling good. I'm excited. I'm excited about chatting about this.
Well, watch Cho back. As also joining us is Agent Martin Carter.
Hello, Dan.
And if this is the first time you're tuning in, or if you're back for more,
Anna got loads then. I just got a hello. What's going on?
Well, you could have carried on talking if you wanted.
Oh, it's fine. You do your spiel. So I'll wait my turn. I'll wait for my moment in the sun like Hawkeye in this film.
That's fine. That's fine. It will be your last. If this is the first time you're tuning in, do note there are spoilers in the podcast. And if you're listening to us, whether you like what you hear or not, please remember to rate it, review it, subscribe. And if you see us on social media, remember one like equals one Sokovian child rescued from the rubble. So be about it and Hulk smash that like button. Apologies as well to our most faithful listeners. We did plan on having this episode out on Easter Sunday, but I was full of chocolate and have now got a cold as punishment. So please please bear with me as I splutter through this one. Now, on with the show. More new names for the mixer. James Spader, Elizabeth Olsen, Kick-Ass, real-life Paul Bettany, and Hawkeye's family.
Yay!
Of course, the usual roster of Avengers, non-Avengers, and of course, Andy Serkis gets his first run out. Of course, we've already recorded our Black Panther episode after the opening night. We can't wait for you to hear that one, but we are releasing these in order, so you better hit that subscribe button if you do want to listen to us chat about that one as well.
People are going to get a massive shock at the audio quality going back down to what it used to be.
Really harsh.
Yeah, right.
I didn't realise Elizabeth Olsen was an Olsen for ages.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't realise she was... I just thought there were two Olsons.
No, part
and
of...
they released boho fashion in high-end department stores, and that was that.
Oh, they were actresses for a really long time.
Oh, yeah. I just didn't realise... I thought there was just two of them.
Yeah,
like, you always forget there's three Osborne siblings as well.
Yeah. Yeah, and they're always more Baldwins than you think there are. As
well. Can you name the third Osborne?
I want to say Jessica.
Something like I want to say it starts with J.
It's something quite
normal.
Yeah.
I think it might be. Is it Amy?
Amy. Yeah, that's it. Amy Osborn. Wow, okay. She didn't want any part of that, did she?
No.
Amy is the one.
Amy is not in this film.
So what do you think of? I mean, let's jump straight into it. What do you think of the third forgotten Olsen in this film?
Yeah, I mean, so I have some issues with the Maximoff twins, but my ire is mostly directed towards Quicksilver, to be honest. I just think that there are now so many iterations of super fast people, and I think all of them have been handled better than this Quicksilver. I mean, we knew right from the beginning that he was never going to touch the X-Men Quicksilver from Days of Future Past. I mean, I think that might have been the best use of quote-unquote slow-mo that's ever been done in cinematic history.
Yeah.
I'm putting it out there.
That was a good
scene.
Better than Neo in the Matrix.
Ooh, maybe. Just for sheer like creativity and fun sort of added in, the Days of Future Past Quicksilver like has my heart forever. Okay. And so I almost feel like with this Quicksilver, there was like something kind of meta going on where they were like, okay, we're never going to top that Quicksilver. Let's just get this done and dusted. We'll kill him off. We don't have to worry about this again. Because I felt like, I don't know, he felt like a little bit of an odd character to me. And this one of the reasons why I really appreciate doing these rewatch things I remember having a real issue with like Scarlet Witch as well. And actually, in this rewatching this, I liked her much, much more than I remember. And I've quite liked the youngest Olsen for a bit. She's done more serious stuff from the beginning of her career, and I think she did a good job. The accents are problematic, but
and in the comic books, are those twins those two superheroes? So are Quicksilver and Scarlet, are they the pairing in the comics?
Yeah, so
they're Magneto's children.
Yeah. Oh. So, and that's the other thing that I think was really frustrating with this iteration of the Maximoff twins, that their actual story, like their origin stories, I think are much more interesting than what they were given here. They're kind of weak sauce revenge, like all Starks.
That's the thing that I had the most problem with rewatching it, is that I didn't... I really liked Quicksilver's story about, you know, where they're trapped in the rubble and they're looking at the Stark bomb for 2 days. Like, I thought that was a really great story about why they were mad at Tony Stark. But I don't feel like you got the other side of that. They came on side of the Avengers quite quickly. I don't think you got that moment of Scarlet Witch being really, really mad at Tony Stark. I felt that we missed that a little bit.
Yeah, and I think you needed more for both of them being like how much they loved their people. Like, I think that needed to be a bit of an extra thing where it was like, if that was what they had to weigh up, their hatred of Tony Stark, and then seeing, because, you know, they're orphans, they don't really seem to have that much connection to anyone else. So the fact that, like, Ultron, I mean, obviously, they don't want him to destroy the planet, but I think if there had been particular, like, I'm doing this in Sokovia, I'm destroying the city, and them being like, we can't let you do that to our people. Although throughout the comics, the Maximoff twins are, like, famously turncoats. Like, they are just constantly changing sides, like, all the time, switching back and forth from being with the Avengers to be back with Magneto to, yeah, they're all over the shop with their loyalties. But they've always been really close. Like, I think there's actually even a bit of, like, on a much later comic iteration, there's a bit of, like, twincest that happens.
Oh, no, let's brush over that one.
So why do you think Marvel was so desperate to get, I mean, obviously Quicksilver kind of meets his end in this movie, but why do you think Marvel was so desperate to get Scarlet Witch into the Marvel Universe?
Well, I think more women superheroes are always good. Like, I think any way they could do to kind of bulk up the kick-ass women they've got there. But I think probably with eyes on the prize of, like, the next generation of the Avengers. So you have that, like, that hero shot at the end with the new guys, with Cap leading them.
Which doesn't really come to fruition, does it? I mean, they have a mission in the start of Civil War, but then it's just the Avengers again. Like, the old faces come back.
Well, let's not get ahead of ourselves. The question that I'm actually dying to ask the both of you, what do you think of everyone's new super suits in this movie?
Yes.
Some significant upgrades. Mm-hmm. Who's your favourite?
Oh, man. I mean, I like ScarJo's Black Widow. Oh, this is going to be confusing now. Scarlet Witch, Scarlet Johansson. Anyway, her new suit with, like, the blue, like, kind of piping. That's and good. Everything. It really made me think of her, like, new, like, kind of electric weapons and stuff. And I like her new suit a lot.
Nice.
I'm glad that Hawkeye's got a new armory at his disposable.
I thought we were going to get more praise for Cap's new suit. Those shoulder pads really make him look like a force to be reckoned
with.
He's
an upside-down triangle, isn't he?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But it's
yeah.
almost like, then you see Ultron's frame in the movie, and that's almost like a caricature of Cap, who's already borderline on a caricature with his, like, big shoulders in this.
God, well, also, when Thor gets into that pool, I mean, that has to be the biggest he has ever been.
Yeah.
Thor, I mean, I think I audibly gasped.
Oh, wow.
But that I remember that bit being a massive moment in the trailer. Mm. And actually in the film, it's a bit weird, much of a muchness,
yeah.
isn't
yeah.
it? It's
another massive moment in the trailer was the one of, like, Bruce Banner, like, crawling along the ground, like, and it looked in the trailer like he was fighting the Hulk and to turn green.
Yeah.
But actually in the movie, it was just, oh, you know, he's calming down, he's becoming Bruce Banner again. Marvel's really smart with how they deliver trailers. Mm. There's so much misdirection.
Yeah, they really are.
I just don't know. It makes me wonder what the hell is going to happen in Infinity War.
Well, that's really interesting because I watched a fan cut of the new Avengers Infinity War trailer and they cut it so all the scenes were chronological rather than just cutting things in between different, you know, so all the Wakanda stuff was together, all the other bits were together, and actually that gave away loads of clues about how the plot might develop, and that was really interesting to watch.
To look after that. That's really interesting.
I'll send you a hyperlink.
Send me one of those hyperlinks, please, in a tweet or a SMS.
I will do that.
I think the opening scene of this movie, just speaking about chronological order, the opening scene is in Sokovia, I feel it's a pretty special scene, right? Mm. The Avengers are working together as a unit. What do you think they've been up to since the last time they came out?
Well, we know we've been watching them.
Well, not all of them.
I think it's been all about shutting down those Hydra bases. I think there's like a little bit of chat at the beginning, like sort of while they're rolling out to take on this next base. They have been, I think, looking for the staff, I think, has been part of their priority. And yeah, they've just been rolling up the map on those Hydra bases.
Because we've talked in another podcast about when the Avengers should avenge and when it's just like a localized thing. And we've talked before about when it's a major intergalactic threat is when the Avengers come together. And that was our criteria in previous podcasts. Mm. This doesn't feel that big of a threat. Like, okay, like the fortress had a force field around it. But apart from that, like, I didn't think it needed all of them to get in there. Like, Tony, yeah, maybe Scarlet Witch, maybe Captain America could have done that without the rest of them.
I think it's having the scepter there that has maybe qualified for all of them to be there. Because I would think that when Thor would definitely want to be sure he's overseeing the collection of that. Was Hulk necessary? I don't know.
But I think they've just come off Captain America Winter Soldier and they've seen the destruction that Hydra's caused. So it's like almost, I think they need to close that down as soon as possible. Because Hydra were going to wipe out like half the Earth.
I'm not sure that felt like enough of a threat for Thor to come back. Like, Thor's always the one who comes in when like stuff's real. And he was just there hanging out with everyone.
Because he loves it. He loves the banter.
He does.
Yeah. Thor is king of banter in this film.
He's so good. There's so much good banter in
this. He seems more Asgardian in this film than any we've seen recently.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, my favourite bit is where he gets mind controlled by Scarlet Witch and he's walking like, you know, I'm an Asgardian. And I'm protected against
it. I'm mighty.
Oh. It's quite just that sudden realness that he feels quite mortal in this film, just Thor.
Yeah, everything involving the hammer in this film as well was so funny from the beginning to the end. Like, there are some threads, like the language thing, I thought was funny, but then I think that there may be a couple too many callbacks for, you know, Cap being the language police. But every iteration of like joking about the hammer, I absolutely loved. I thought that was, I mean, I'm sure we'll talk a lot about the party scene, but even all the way at the end when Vision is like, oh, it's terribly well balanced, and he's like, yes, you know, well, you just swing on the follow through.
Yeah. I think as well, like, I wasn't a huge fan of this movie when it came out. I really liked it, but because it was, you know, it's an Avengers movie. I'm as a base level, I'm gonna like these Marvel movies, but I just thought it was not. It didn't live up to the hype that the first Avengers movie did.
Well, this is one that broke Joss Whedon, wasn't it?
Well, yeah, but you know what? Rewatching it now, after kind of sitting through the last 3 years of... Oh, we talked about it in the Guardians podcast, the last episode, if anyone wants to go back and listen to it, about how Marvel kind of has just started breaking everything with a joke, any tension. This one was devoid of that, and it felt really fresh actually going back and watching a movie that was less jokey, that was more serious. It was still funny and entertaining, but the jokes were ring-fenced to like little segments. It was quite refreshing, actually.
And there's so many moments in this film where we just get to see the Avengers fighting together.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And like, that's my favourite thing, just to watch them, like, you know, spark off each other. Some really great moments with the hammer and the shield that I really love.
Yes.
And just seeing the kind of teamwork between them, I think we haven't really seen that in full since New York in the first Avengers film, and now we get so many of those in this film. There's quite a lot of the interplay between them. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, and I totally agree, Dan. I had the exact same experience where I remember walking out of the cinema when this movie played and feeling a bit disappointed, like a bit let down. It didn't quite deliver the way I wanted it to. And watching it again, I enjoyed it so much more. And I think there are a few things contributing to that, one of which, when you're building up waiting to see it in the cinema, you've got these 2 year gaps where you're just like anticipating everything it could be. And I think that's
Infinity
been,
War.
Yeah, exactly. But again, I think watching these movies in the lead up to Infinity War is really going to help that as well, because like, there were also a few moments in this movie which I'm sure the cinema just blew right past me in terms of like the world building, the calls to what is coming next, like the whole bit where they identify where the vibranium came from, like Wakanda. Totally, the cinema would have been like, yes, weird superhero words. They're just talking about stuffs.
Oh yeah, I remember being so hyped for Andy Serkis and being like, wow, you know, he's playing Ulysses Klaue. He's gonna have a big part in this movie. We're gonna see Wakanda, and then it's like, is the vibranium lad.
Yeah, yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. But even just like when they referenced it, I just didn't care. But now having seen Black Panther and sort of what all that means, and even in the run-up to the movie being released, there was all that talk about like this is not going well. He's having a lot of battles with the producers because, like any director that takes on this franchise, there's so many pressures of like, you've got to have this, you've got to have this, you've got to have this. And I have some concerns for the Russo brothers. I hope it's been going all right, because before you've seen the great films that they're doing, and then the bigger the deal the film is, surely the more pressure there is from like, gotta add this, gotta add
this. I felt with Ultron, it was a bit of a jigsaw. You had so many elements to fit in, so many new characters to introduce. You know, you're at that difficult point in a phase.
Totally.
But I feel like with Infinity War, actually, we're almost wrapping up. Yeah. There isn't a huge amount of stuff to do for the future. You'll have to do something, I imagine, to make sure that Marvel can still make billions of dollars. But actually, I would say with Infinity War and the second, the fourth even, I don't think there's as much pressure on them, because they don't have to do so many bits fitting together. They've got to basically get five Infinity Stones onto a gauntlet and stop Thanos.
Oh my God. I can't wait for the Infinity Stones to be done. I can't wait for them to be done.
The gems.
Oh God.
Do you ever remember Ice Gems?
The sweet
chocolate
thing. No.
There's a little biscuit with a little bit of sugar on top, and they come in various different colours.
It's like
colours.
A really hard... it's just really hard sweets.
Oh yeah, they were entertaining for your mouth.
You get a very sharp tongue.
Coming out of something that you said there about the Infinity Stones. Obviously, we're still yet to see the Soul Stone, but the big reveal in this movie, which is actually more important in hindsight for me, was we see the gem from Loki's staff actually becoming the Mind Stone, and that's something that I think. The fact that it came out of the scepter kind of passed me by on the first watch.
Yeah.
The fact that it changed colour.
Yes.
I always think, oh, the one in Loki's staff is blue.
Yeah.
And then I get confused with the Tesseract, and it's very confusing.
I kind of wonder if they would... But is that how it works in the comics? So that stone has always been yellow, yes?
Yeah, I think to me, it feels like a retcon. It feels like they've gone, oh, we introduced two things that are blue. How do we make
one yellow?
Blue? I think they played it well.
Oh, yeah.
But I don't believe that from the first time we saw Loki with his staff and the first time we saw the Tesseract, they knew that they were going to be different stones. Because I think that's when you know, the Cap wasn't a Disney film, was it?
Mm-mm.
So I think it's kind of after you've seen the Tesseract in Captain America, then Disney take over and really start to push the Infinity Stones agenda. They obviously have this overarching plan of how they're going to do it. I feel that is a little bit of a way of kind of shimmying the Mind Stone in.
Mm. And that explanation that Thor gives after going for a bath in that the cave, like, it's really quick. Like, you just get a glimpse of each of the stones, and it's like, there's these stones that kind of destroy the world. I was like, that was really quick. Yeah. Like, if you weren't interested in the franchise or talk about it, you know, for 40 minutes every week on a podcast, like, that would have confused me.
Yeah,
it might be quite useful, though, for people who, you know, do just watch an Avengers movie. They're like, oh, I haven't seen all the other ones, I just watched the Avengers ones.
I was thinking that, because, like, we got that really good exposition given by the Collector in Guardians of the Galaxy, where he talks about where the stones came from, and that was so useful. But yeah, if you're someone that just watches the Avengers movies, how could you possibly, like, know what was going on?
Mm. Yeah, definitely. I mean, so let's change track a little bit then. Let's talk about this movie. Because I'm sure we'll be doing plenty of chit-chatting about that in a few weeks' time. But Tony Stark's kind of the centerpiece of this movie, in terms of the Avengers, in terms of how he causes the problems.
Yeah. And boy, did this drive home for me the fact that Iron Man 3 was unneeded, because those issues are still there. Anyway, sorry.
Yeah, well, that's exactly what I was, you know, coming on to say. He's still having a tough time rationalizing his actions. He still has those kind of like bits of, you know, what we can only assume as the viewer is like PTSD sort of things. And then he lets a dangerous AI loose on the world. So what do you make of Tony in this movie?
I mean, I think his actions still make sense from the mindset of Tony. Again, it would have been better if Iron Man 3 hadn't happened, where it sort of seemed like he kind of was getting his shit together at the end. If he was still someone very traumatized by what happened, that, I mean, he does make mention to, like, you know, I saw what was out there. I went through that that whole, I know what threat exists to the planet. Imagine, you know, armor around the world. I think that still makes sense. And he is someone that always has kind of pushed the envelope, and we've seen time and time again, doesn't really think the consequences through before he does it. He thinks that his mind and his tech is enough to keep the control.
Yeah, it feels to me like this movie could have been, in the way that Civil War is Captain America Civil War, it feels to me like this could have been Iron Man, Age of Ultron, and just negated Iron Man 3.
Totally.
And then in the same way, I feel like Civil War could have actually been Avengers Civil War rather than Captain America. Because it just feels, it feels like this is the actual end to Iron Man's story.
Definitely.
Really. And he kind of kicks into a new phase after this when he's, you know, thinking about how to sort of solve all the world's problems.
This could be Hawkeye, Age of Ultron.
Could it, Martin?
But just before we move on to how great Hawkeye is, I really liked Iron Man in this film because we've just watched all the other ones. Like, I really appreciated his rationale behind his decisions a lot more than I had any other time. And I've watched Age of Ultron quite a lot. I really liked his... all the things that he's been through has led him to this conclusion, and then the fallout of it. Like, I appreciated that a lot more this time around. I think I think I've developed a bit of a soft spot for Tony.
Yeah,
maybe it's because the width of his trousers has narrowed over the last 10 years.
He's getting better and better tailors.
Giving us more sight of Tony's soft spot. So you clearly gushing to talk about Hawkeye. Is he giving you that Midwest family life realness?
He is. The fact that, like, he wears a chino at one point, like, which is ticking a massive box. But it's just, I think he actually drives, like, I know this could be Iron Man's film, but actually Hawkeye has really big moments in this film that changes direction with things. Like, he takes them all back to his ranch. You know, there's the bit which actually he convinces Scarlet Witch to become an Avenger. There are really, really good moments with Hawkeye. And, like, he is a bit of a damp squib at some point. Like, he does, like, always, he's always the one to get shot, isn't he? Like, he's always the one who, like, takes one for the team. But there was, you know, I really liked when his wife was like, you know, she acknowledged that he was the least super of the superheroes. But actually,
I'm still proud of you.
Yeah. And I was like, I'm still proud of you, Hawkeye, because he is the one who's the most out of his depth, but he's still the one who, you know, that he's like, this is my job. Mm-hmm. I still have to go back on the rock that's about to fall from the sky. I don't, you know, he's the one who has to drive around the rock with Black Widow because he can't fly. You know, like, he's resourceful. We've talked before about how him and Black Widow are the ones who ground these films. And I feel like he did so much grounded of it. You know, he brought everyone back down to, you know, get some R&R, you know, have a lovely G&T on the veranda of the ranch, fix a tractor, chop some wood. You know, he's the emotional heart of this film for me.
It's a shame that Pride doesn't get you on a movie poster.
Why isn't he on the Infinity movie poster?
I don't know if he's going to be in this one.
His name's not even on it, I don't think.
Oh my God, do you think he gets an off-screen death?
Don't.
That dead be before the movie starts.
That would be the greatest injustice.
No, I won't... Maybe it's one of those, because we know that it's not Infinity War Part 2 anymore, but it's clearly going to lead into the future Marvel films. So maybe he kind of pops back at the end.
Yeah. Maybe he's going to be in the post-credits scene.
Yeah,
could be. It could be one big Hawkeye-shaped post-credits.
But I'm going to give massive props to Hawkeye in this film. He definitely had several really good beats. I do really like that speech he gives to Scarlet Witch. Like, none of this makes sense. We've got to do it anyway. And I know it's gotten a bit of stick, the whole, like, schmaltzy family scene. But I really liked it. And I really liked his dynamic with his wife. Like, so often you have the female partner of the superhero, the soldier, the whatever, like, being like, you don't have to do this. Like, think about your family. And I really like that it's so clear that that's where he gets... that Hawkeye gets a lot of his strength from, to, like, be the person that's running with these superheroes, has this responsibility. And, you know, and she makes a point of, like, I think they do need you. And I think for him, he's like, yeah, I know that. Yeah. And that she is very encouraging. The same way that you know, any wife of a soldier or someone in the armed forces, like, it sucks. And it's hard to see that person go off to the next battle, but the point is to be supportive and do what you can for them. And yeah, I think having that heart, especially when you see so many of the other Avengers have really struggled with their personal relationships, to see that that's something that Hawkeye's been pulling off. And I love that Natasha is like Aunt Nat.
Yeah,
I thought that was really so sweet. Nice.
Okay, well, listeners, we've got a treat for you today because we've got a brand new segment, which is Anna's Montage Talk.
This is not a new segment.
It's not really. Well, it's now
we're formalizing.
It's a formal segment now. If anyone has a snappier name that they can think, please
Anna's
let
marvelous
us know.
Montages.
Yeah. Okay. Let's go with that for now.
Okay.
Work in progress. We neglected to chat about montages and Guardians, which I know you're distraught about.
Yeah.
But I believe you've got some thoughts on this movie.
Some thoughts.
Yeah, some thoughts. Well, I mean, I always love a good sciencing montage. When Tony and Banner were getting their science on in the lab, that was really good. Sort of ending bit, there's a good montage there. I think it's just, it's interesting because, well, the main reason I was so distraught about not mentioning the Guardians montage, even though it was a relatively short, just suiting and booting, getting ready to go kick the bad guys, but we haven't had one in a really long time. And I think just in general, that's sort of interesting how the Avengers movies have gone, where there are so many moments to hit that you don't really need those passage of time montages. And this is the first time you see it kind of introduced again. And it just felt like very comforting. It felt like a snuggly blanket you put back on after being away from it for a while. And you're like, yes, science montage. Yes, like action hero montage.
I find the science bits really cringy.
Oh.
Because they're just so obviously not science. Like, typing fast on a keyboard is not science.
I know. Bruce is wearing like...
projecting
much,
lights into it.
That is pretty much exactly what the majority of scientists
like over
the
past 50 years, over the last 50 years of filmmaking, science is not... evolved past like lots of windows open on a screen and
but can you say, I mean, Banner does wear a lab coat for an uncomfortably long amount of time in what like a seemingly casual situation.
My boyfriend was watching this with me last night and he said that he thinks that when War Machine turns on his suit, as opposed to Iron Man getting in his, it starts with the Windows XP. like it's like the terrible one. And then when he gets out of it, he goes, dun, 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 which I thought was quite a good
comparison.
Like,
yeah.
War Machine gets the rubbish tech.
Totally.
Well, one of the things that's not rubbish tech in this movie is, of course, Ultron's self-made body. The first time we see him appear is in the Avengers Tower.
Creepy. So creepy.
Yeah.
I would say that's one of the creepiest introductions to a villain we've had in a really long time. That sort of shambling. Ooh, yeah.
Oh, definitely. I was watching this last night and just the bit where he's like a husk of a Ultron bot sort of thing. What does he call them? Iron Legion?
Yeah,
is that what Legion. Tony calls them?
The bit where he punches through himself later in the film really scared me the first time that I watched it. I wasn't expecting it, and it really made me jump.
Yeah. Oh, I forgot about that, and it scared me this time. And I thought that was a really terrifying thing to do. That's probably one of the most villainous things that we've seen in the Marvel Universe today. It's just a real, pure evil.
And, I mean, all the credit to the voicing, like James Spader, so amazing as Ultron. I think there was like a little bit of like camp to him as well, which I really liked. But that sort of unhinged quality to everything he said in his inflection.
Oh, yeah. Ultron had way more personality than I was expecting going into this movie. Mm-hmm. Like,
and a lot of Tony Stark as well.
Well, yeah, that's the thing that's so great. I love that. That of course, like Tony was formulating this AI, so of course it would take bits off his personality, like even down to the point when they're in facing off against Claw and he makes a joke about Thor says something like nothing's meant to be broken, and Ultron's like, well, omelets, and Tony was like, ah, beat me by like 60 seconds, and like that's when it really hit home to me of like, oh yeah, he, so much of him is Tony.
When I first watched it, I thought Robert Downey Jr. was voicing.
Oh really? Oh, that would have been interesting.
Yeah,
I mean, I love James.
He does
Spader,
have a lot of the same sort of inflections, I think, in the way that he talks.
And I think the Ultron's entrance juxtaposed against the great scene we just had of the camaraderie, the friendship. Everyone like feels like a real unit, and it feels safe, it feels fun, and all that just like you feel it falling away. Like you can actually feel it piece by piece falling away as Ultron appears, and especially right after you've just had the sort of, you know, bants and jokes about who is worthy and what does worthy.
You are not worthy.
No, you're not worthy. Nope. Oh God, I love what, like, Cap grabs the hammer
and it moves
and it just like wiggles at Thor's face. It's such good silent acting by Hemsworth just there. Yeah. Love it.
You see, for me, I was watching it last night. I was like, oh, I really like when his face drops. But actually, it's not the face drop that's the funny bit. It's after when Cap walks away and he's like, oh, yeah, it's fine.
Yeah, yeah. It's all fine.
That's the hilarious bit.
I really like the bit of the party where Banner and Black Widow have that kind of conversation about, you know, over the cocktail.
Yeah.
That's really nice. That's really well done. And then Banner and Captain America's conversation about Black Widow afterwards, I thought that was a really clever piece of script writing. I like that a lot.
Taking the tone down a little, though, how do you feel about the new Avengers motorboat?
What?
Do you not think, you know, when they're in the middle of the fight scene, Banner jumps over the thing and he gets a face full of ScarJo's breast area?
Oh, God, yeah, I completely forgot.
She says, don't turn green. I'm like, it's not green that I've been worrying about, love.
You know, I haven't seen many DC movies because they're a bag of trash. But I've seen the first half of Wonder Woman. I've not seen Justice League.
You haven't finished Wonder Woman?
No, it bored me. It was just Captain America. We'll probably chat about this another day. But I like the character of Wonder Woman from the first half of the movie, and I really like Gal Gadot in Batman v Superman. Just something about the storyline of that movie was just not grabbing me. So I turned it off. I should probably watch the rest of it. But from what I understand, in Justice League, there's a pretty poorly placed scene that's a bit similar to this, where someone gets a face full of Wonder Boob. Is that a...
I saw it really recently, like for the first time really recently.
Yeah, we both watched it really recently. I don't remember faces and boobs.
No. I was distracted by so much other crap that was happening. Anyway, yeah.
Well, I think either way, that was probably, for me, the only scene that felt misplaced in the whole movie, because they had this really kind of coy relationship, and then it was just like...
Face of boob.
But I really like that Scarlet Witch is... her clothing isn't really tight like Black Widow's is. Yeah. I like that. Like, her leather coat is quite boxy almost. But I do remember, and I don't know if either of you remember this, in the very last bit in Sokovia, there's, you know, the mother of the child who... She's very booby.
She's running around in like a negligee entire time. The mom and the son, they keep cutting back to the blonde.
There was a lot of boob in that particular moment. That's the only boob I noticed.
I can only assume she was maybe taking a nap or getting ready to go out.
I've said boob too many times now. Boob.
Anyway, just quickly back to that party, that conversation in particular. Just your opinion on it. So do you think at this point they haven't gotten together, and this is just them sort of teasing around the issue? Because then later in the farmhouse where she talks about joining him in the shower, that felt more like banter between a couple that's sort of been established or is more comfortable in what's going on or what's about to happen. But do you think, and I think like the conversation at the party could be played either way, like they have already hooked up a couple times or they're dancing around it or nothing's happened yet. What are people's thoughts?
I don't think anything has happened.
Okay.
And I think they're very, very, they have a very intense friendship that is, that there are underlying feelings within that, particularly a kind of a romance part of it. But, you know, when she's the one who can talk him down from being the Hulk, and that's not that she's a great spy, and it's not that she's or that she's a woman. I think it is their connection.
Yeah.
I do think it's not necessarily flirting, but they're almost like, I think the bit about joining you in the shower is them kind of pushing the boundaries with each other and seeing if the other one feels the same sort of way.
Yeah.
And they just end up being thrown in really extreme circumstances that make them have to have those conversations, particularly about children.
Yeah.
I always got the impression that they were really, really close friends, but they were trying to see how the other one felt throughout their entire kind of friendship.
Yeah, because I thought it was really interesting seeing those conversations kind of juxtaposed with the way she is around Cap, or like during Winter Soldier. Like, their conversations that she and Steve have, you could definitely construe that as flirting as well, but it feels so different. And I've had some friends that are being like, God, what's she doing? I thought she was going to get with Cap. That's who she wanted. But during Winter Soldier, I never got the impression that they were
banter,
like,
wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It was like fun, flirty. And, you know, when he says at the party, it's like, oh, I've seen her flirting up close. I think that's true. I think she definitely is like flirting, but it just feels so different to what she does with Bruce. And I like that.
And also you saw her kind of flirt with Tony Stark as well when she was still like a secret hidden kind of agent as well.
Yeah, I do quite like it. I had some issues with the child scene. I know this wasn't entirely what she was referring to, but I felt some of the language was a bit awkward to make it seem like she was referring to herself as a monster because she couldn't have children. And I did not like that. I don't think that's encapsulates entirely what she meant, but that's definitely how it came across.
That's one of those scenes as well. Like we talked in Iron Man 3 about just having a little bit more time with Tony to talk about his mental health. This is one where I wanted like another minute in the scene because she kind of jumped from, this is what happened to me in the Red Room. I was sterilized. And I'm a monster.
Yeah.
Like that jump was like one sentence after the other. If there was a few more lines of dialogue within that, and then she says, I feel like a monster because I don't, you know, I don't feel like a real woman or all that kind of thing. But it was quite a compact conversation that a lot happened with. Like they went from flirting about having shower sex to neither of us can have children. I was sterilized. I feel horrendous about it. Like that was a lot to fit into 2 minutes.
Agreed.
Yeah. I think they were shagging.
Really?
No, I don't really. I think.
But he can't get his heart rate up higher.
That's exactly what I was about to say. You know, he's made big strides.
I think they fixed that. They must have fixed that. Tony would have made sure that was.
I think it's but I think they've been emotionally at it. Do you know what I mean? Because I think going straight from flirting over a bar to having deep conversations, I think they've been having that sort of relationship for a while, but just not really maybe a physical relationship. Because I think when they kiss in the movie, I think that's the first time they've kissed.
Mm. Yeah, I do. Mm-hmm. And when she says, I adore you, like that, I think that's such a brilliant, that's such a, her character way of expressing herself, I think. And it would have been too much to say, I love you. And we'd have got that with, in like The Incredible Hulk, like Liv Tyler would have said, I love you. Like she had just thrown it all out there.
Yeah.
But Scarlett Johansson or Black Widow, I'm getting so confused.
It's really
Scarlett
confusing.
Like that, I thought that was such a good moment for them.
And it felt so real because like in other scenarios, you could see Black Widow wouldn't have a problem saying, I love you or even I adore you to manipulate someone into something if needed. But the way she says, I adore you, I totally believe it, even though she then pushes him off a cliff. But it felt really real.
Yeah.
Speaking about the other side then, the big green guy. What do you think about his little wander off into outer space?
Oh, it felt so bad. Just big Hulk in the Quinjet, all on his own, going off.
He has a bit of a tough time in this movie.
Yeah.
I think one of the huge parts of the trailer was the Hulkbuster scene.
Mm-hmm. That scene is awesome. I love that fight.
Incredible, right?
So much destruction, though.
So much destruction.
Like just leveling cities left, right, and center.
Yeah, what city do you think that was?
It's a made-up.
Do you think it was just made up miscellaneous? Yeah. Do you think it was in Africa?
Well, so where did they... I don't even know where they went to find Claw. Like, where...
That was it says on the bottom for, like, the location stings come up really...
They're really fast.
Yeah, but I remember paying attention for that one, and it just says, like, shipping yard.
I think it said African coast on it, but, okay. I mean, ooh. African coast, like...
there's a lot of ground
to cover. Like, millions of miles of Earth.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is true. And I think... It didn't feel anything like, I mean, we know it's not Wakanda because we've visited Wakanda.
Well, they wouldn't have let that happen there. Like the Wakandans, there's no way.
And Wakanda's landlocked.
Yes. Yeah.
It felt like there was a lot of vibranium in comparison to what we were scrapping over in, you know, it's yet to come. And listeners, if you've not seen it yet, plug your ears for a second. But it felt like they had a lot of vibranium at the disposal in this movie, where in Black Panther they're scrapping over like a tube of it and that's it, and they go on like international diplomatic missions to get a less than a square meter of it back.
Claw seemed to have run off with quite a lot of it,
but I wonder if Ultron used it or he disposed of it, or...
Well, it was what he was making is...
It's what made the engine that brought Sokovia into the sky.
And it's what made Vision.
Yeah, so he put some of it into the new body, and then a ton of it went into making the lifting engine. Up. Yeah.
Very strange. I think of all the times we've watched movies, whether the Marvel Universe or not, having the sort of end of the world trope to them. It's usually big holes in the sky, someone's got a nuke or something, but do you think a floating city ready to drop on everyone's heads is any more or less interesting than those?
I struggle generally with like Ultron's plan. Like I found it really difficult to keep a hold on. Like, I knew who was in the internet. I knew who was trying to get nuclear codes. I knew who was angry about humans and wanted to kill them all. Like, so, what was he after? I didn't really get it.
Peace in our time. Peace in our time. But peace in his time.
But he had a really strange philosophy, and it tended to shift around quite a lot.
And the sort of the whole thing about desperately wanting evolution. It seemed like he wanted people to evolve as well. So, because like there was one brief mention where it seemed like his plan was, okay, meteor or nuclear codes. I think he was looking for just some sort of world-ending event, and whatever rises after the event, that's the worthy bunch. They're the ones that get to continue, you know, whatever event this is. Because he talks about like, oh, there were tons before the dinosaurs got it, you know, stuff like that. But then he seemed to be really after a single body. Where, you know, before when you have this ability to be in all these different drones all over the world, but he really wanted to encapsulate himself in this one thing. He wanted to be the next step. But, it just seemed, it was a little bit convoluted for me. And that's when I think more time with Ultron would have been good to sort of see, like, the madness, like, to see his mind pulled in kind of different directions would have been good, I think. So I think it kind of makes sense when you sort of pull it like the kind of individual pieces, but when you look at it as like one coherent plan, it's sort of like there are better ways to achieve this.
There's a great moment where he's like, oh, and this is a bit where I tell you my evil plan.
Yeah, that was
but
so
he
bad.
Does he tells like, he tells Helen Cho it, yeah. He tells Black Widow it when she's locked up, like he literally will tell anyone his evil plan.
Well, I love that when she was locked up and he was like, I don't have anyone else to tell this to, so here I'm gonna tell it to you.
He's just an extrovert, he just wants to share.
Yeah. Well, I think he changes as the movie goes on though. He sets out with a very clear sort of prerogative with this whole peace in our time thing, but then molds that as he learns and experiences more to just be like, ah, no, screw humans. I just want to kill you all and we'll have a metal world. Yeah. I think we see in some alternative storylines in the comics where it's like the Age of Ultron comic book only came out in like 2013 or something, so it was pretty new before this comic, before this movie, sorry. And it's sort of an alternate universe where Ultron has seized control of the world, and it's just like a metal earth, and like all the heroes are kind of underground running from him, and he's just got Ultron bots everywhere killing them. And we sort of see it in this movie that his goal stops being peace and it starts being just my vision for the world. It's not clear.
There are question marks,
but I think that's a good point, how he would change over time, because I think also he is so new, and I think I would have liked to have seen a bit more, because there are a few instances where he does something or interacts with people in a way that's very childlike, and you see the kind of almost like a toddler rage, like when he cuts off Claw's arm because he makes a reference to Tony and he freaks out about it. I think a few more hits of that would have been really useful to, you know, he's still figuring out his own strength, his own power, even though he knows already that he is, you know, he's formidable. But yeah, that sort of like toddler-like tantrum to certain things I thought played really well.
And what do you think of the bit with Claw? Obviously Andy Serkis, I think, was great in this movie. He's great when he pops up in Black Panther, but the bit where he's negotiating with the mutant twins, or Hans twins, he's like, I only deal with the boss.
Yeah.
And Ultron just flies up in the window behind. I think for me, Ultron needed more moments like you've just said of rage, but he also needed more of those really sinister moments. We saw it right at the party scene. We saw it again in the window there, and we kind of see it when he punches his own head through. But it'd been good to get one or two really big hits in there.
I think you're right. I think he loses it a bit by the end as well. It gets very quippy. It doesn't feel quite as
And Loki gets one of those moments in Germany, you know, in the first Avengers film where he's addressing the crowd. Don't feel like Ultron had one of those big moments to kind of show his vision.
He's got the speech sort of when Sokovia sort of lifting you to the ground. He sort of broadcasts this kind of speech thing. But yeah, you're right. It needed something more intimate, almost like not just like the kind of big thing that's happening.
Or I think on the opposite side, it had been with his access to, I don't think we saw him exploit his access to the whole of the world's information.
The net.
The world wide web. We didn't see him really exploit that. And I think he could have really easily done something that broadcast to everyone or at least to significant people that was really sinister about how he was going to essentially drop a meteor on the planet and kill everyone. Which is a really nice thing of him to do.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Avengers saved the day.
Yeah, with the help of Paul Bettany. I'm so happy to have fleshed form.
Fleshed form Paul Bettany. Wow. He's had a good stint as Jarvis.
Mm. I'm going to miss him. I don't like Friday.
No, I don't like Friday either. And I think
I quite liked Friday.
Really?
Yeah.
She sounds really down all the time.
I just love how Irish she is.
She's very Irish, yeah. I do like that.
They're going to level that building. I love doing an Irish accent. Oh.
And what, you know, all that leads to is we see the goodbyes for a lot of the kind of old timers now. Thor, Iron Man, kind of make way, Hulks. Already disappeared in this movie.
But I don't understand this. I don't understand why they all go away and then why they're all suddenly back. Because Civil War literally came out the following year. So why were they...
What?
Was it like a market employee to make you wonder why they all came back?
Or? But Hulk doesn't come back. And I think that was kind of an important thing. Because I think the big battle that happens with the Hulk Crusher and that whole scene, like as amusing as much of it was, like that's the first time that civilians have seen Hulk's abilities, like as like a villain or something like that. Because like the New York one supposedly was completely wiped under the carpet. No one ever heard about that. And when he was fighting the Chitauri, it was on the side of good. Whereas this, like, and I think that scene where Hulk like comes back into himself and sees the devastation he's caused, like Banner carries that with him for the rest of the movie. So I think him running off like kind of makes sense. Like he doesn't want to be a part of anything that's going to put him in this position again. And I think it makes sense for Tony to sort of bow out for a while. He's just done messed up real bad and needs to collect himself. And Thor's got to, you know, go back to the play.
Yeah, I remember walking out of this movie and saying to my friend who I saw it with that I was really surprised at how cordially it all ended.
Yeah.
We knew at this point that Civil War was coming up. We knew that Tony and Steve were going to have a bust up. Why are they happy at the end?
Yeah.
Like, surely if anything, I was expecting that Cap would be like, get out.
Yeah.
This is my Avengers. We don't need your money. You can sod off. But instead it was like, ah, see you around, buddy. And I was like, how does that excite me at all for Civil War?
Yeah.
It didn't. And I find it really strange that it was as just all back to normal, haha, by the end of it.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I think more antagony? That's not a word.
Awkward.
Awkwardness. More awkwardness.
But also, why is Falcon allowed in the new Avengers when he didn't come to Sokovia?
Yeah, I thought that too. Yeah, more air support would have been great.
Yeah, it really would. Carrying people, lifting Hawkeye around.
Yeah.
He was busy, though. They had a line in the movie that
he was finding the Winter Soldier, wasn't he?
Yeah. I didn't pick up on this the first time, but he was like, you've got me running around the earth trying to find your mate.
Fair enough.
And that's what he's been off doing.
Has he checked Wakanda?
Not yet.
Who knows? I mean, I'm guessing that's where he's going to check next because it sounds like he's checked everywhere else. But I thought the new Avengers lineup, actually, when we saw it, it confirmed for me something that I've been saying for a long time, is that we're getting a new Avengers lineup at the end of Infinity War. A proper new Avengers lineup. Not like, here's some people you already know. We're getting a new, big, completely different.
And I think we do need new and big as well, because I remember seeing that the Avengers who you know, the team that Cap and Black Widow are forming this, and they're all essentially sidekicks, aren't they? And a team purely made up of those people is not going to cut it for me. I need like a Captain Marvel to fly in. I need some other big personality to to fill that void that has been left by three, four major characters.
You've got five picks. You've got to pick four people and a leader. Who would you have?
Oh, man.
Okay, so I'd have Black Widow.
As the leader?
No, she's like second in command. Okay. I think Captain America and Black Widow is the two in charge. Okay. It's quite good. I'd keep a Scarlet Witch, I think. Okay. Just for some gender equality.
Doctor Strange?
Absolutely not. I'd have Thor because I think you need someone of that kind of might. You know, you do need like a Tony or Thor or a Vision, don't you? And then maybe Falcon. Because in my Avengers would be like the Winter Soldier Avengers where they go on heists and solve crimes.
So Secret Avengers. You are all over Secret Avengers. Yeah. And this is a story that I've been peddling for ages now. We're getting Secret Avengers in this movie. Mm. Wakanda, Falcon, Scarlet Witch, Captain America, Black Widow, Winter Soldier, all of them under the radar, teaming up. Pow!
I mean, this might be a bit of a spoiler, so cover your ears now. But I read an Empire that they went to a shoot in Edinburgh where a certain thing happens that I'm not going to name. But they say they shot that scene and it was inspired by heist movies.
Ooh.
And that's apparently one of the first scenes you see in the film. And
I'm getting it. So we're getting Secret Avengers.
But Edinburgh of all places to have a heist.
Yeah.
We're getting Secret Avengers. I will sit here in 2 months' time and I will look at you both at this table and say, I was so goddamn right.
But I want to hear yours, Anna. Who would your five?
Oh.
Your five team.
So is this without?
I didn't pick Hawkeye. Oh my
god! Oh, Martin.
Shame. It's all right. He's been killed.
Oh,
he's
my
done.
God.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Okay. So, but is this without our main players or any five I can?
I think any.
You have the whole Avengers. You're Nick Fury.
Yeah.
You're starting an initiative. Who do you knock on the door of?
Okay, I would say probably Black Panther.
Oh yeah.
Captain America, I think he does just need to be the leader. He's just such a good leader.
Do you think there's no Avengers without Cap?
I kind of feel that. I think that's sort of what they've been kind of pushing us to the whole time.
When Thanos crushes his skull.
Oh no, please don't say it. Don't say it. No.
I don't think he's good. I don't think if he does die, I don't think he's going to get a gruesome death. I think he's going to get like a...
Beautiful and tragic.
Like a bloody sash, like Carl.
Yeah, when he dies in Civil War in the comics, spoilers for anyone who's not read Civil War, but it did come out about 15 years ago now. He gets like shot on the steps of like a big politics building. And it's very like he's wearing the flag. He gets
It's got
to
be an aesthetic death, doesn't
it? It's very like poignant. I don't think he's just going to get skull crushed.
God, sort of like Game of Thrones style.
No. Carry on.
Okay, Captain America is a leader, I think. Black Panther, Scarlet Witch, mostly because she seems to have unlimited powers. Falcon, because I think like Cap needs someone like that. I could foresee a bit of pushback from Black Panther. So you need Falcon to sort of...
You do need someone who can fly, don't you?
Yeah, you need the aerial bit is super important. Oh, God, and then the last place, I don't know. Vision, maybe? Yeah.
Two flyers.
Yeah.
But Vision, I think, brings magic to your thing. Yeah. You can have a magic.
We've got, and I think he and Scarlet Witch. Scarlet Witch work well together, I think.
If they have a fallout, though.
Yeah, that's true.
Shouldn't do the washing up.
That's true. Maybe instead of Vision, can I have Suri? Can I have Suri?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll have Suri. Yeah.
Dan?
Wow. Oh, well, I mean, what is an Avenger? That's the biggest question. I think I'd go... My sort of Avengers is... I'd really like Secret Avengers comics, but I think if I was picking a lineup, I'd always end up with like a... What comic books usually call like a mighty Avengers team, which is just like your biggest ones. You know what I mean? So you'd have Hulk, Thor, I'd probably pick War Machine and Tony Stark.
Ultimate Destruction.
Yeah. And then I'd... You know, maybe I'd get... I think Black Widow's pretty good at doing the destruction, but on like the ground level as well. So I'd throw Black Widow in there.
You filled five.
Is that my five?
Yeah. More for you.
Leader of that group though would be War Machine. I wouldn't
Military.
Pick Tony.
Interesting.
Yeah. In fact, maybe I'd ship Tony out for someone else. Yeah. To be determined.
I think we've all had enough of Tony, haven't we, really?
Well, he just keeps screwing stuff up. Like, you know?
You see, I prefer Iron Man to War Machine, but I am sick of Tony Stark. Mm. So if we could get War Machine in an Iron Man suit, that'd be great.
Well, we don't know who's in Veronica in Infinity War. Could be someone completely different inside.
Yeah. Anyway, seeing as though we're going so off piece that we're not even talking.
Like, this is not the Age of Ultron podcast, is it?
No, it's about really
so,
not.
But this, I mean, this film is like slap bang in the middle of the whole MCU. Yeah. So
we've got so much more to come.
Yeah.
And if you're watching along, you can join us next week as we'll be wrapping up Phase 2, chatting about the little tiny Ant-Man.
I've not seen this film all the way through.
Oh wow. So, well... please remember to watch the movie before next week. And if you're listening, if you're watching along with us, remember to subscribe, turn on notifications so you get to join us for that. Anna, you've brought in some delicious cake-looking items this week for us to eat.
Yes.
Do you want to just give us a 30-second description of your expertise here?
I don't know if that's necessary, but yes. So I've done us some Rice Krispie Marvel torsos. I've got the Hulk's abs, got the Iron Man's front of the suit, Thor.
Thor one was not great.
Which one are you going to
get? The Thor one.
That's not good.
Just because he ended up being a bit more aquamarine than a dark necessary.
Martin, which one are you going to go for?
I think Black Widow's looks the most appealing to me.
Really? Which one's Black Widow?
The one with the
I thought that was Spider-Man. It's red and has a spider on it.
I thought that as well as soon as I made it. It's very, very difficult.
I think I'm going to go for the Hulk again, if that's okay.
Go for the Hulk.
Wow. And so, Anna, if listeners want to see this delicious plate of treats, you're going to put it on your social media, right?
Totally.
Where can users find you?
I'm on Instagram at AnnaMarvelous, 2 N's, 2 L's.
Wow. And Martin, what about you?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at MartinLoves.
Cool.
And also shout out to my friends Adam and Matt, who both had a go at me for not giving them a shout out last week.
Wow. Well, Adam and Matt, if you're listening, thank you for listening to the podcast again. Please remember to leave a review and do your buddy Martin a solid. And I'm at DVM Preston across Twitter and Instagram. I'll be posting some pictures in the lead up to this podcast as well. And we will see you next Wednesday for Ant-Man. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. Have a wonderful week. This has been a marvelous lunch break.
Bye.
Bye.
There was only one post-credits in this one, wasn't there?
Yeah.
Because I waited right until the end, and I was...
I think we all did.
I was sat there saying, there's definitely another one.
I totally thought there'd be another one. Yeah. Then I finally Googled it, and I was like, I'm out.
What did you think? I mean, we talked the past few weeks about tier A post-credits. For me, this is the tier A++ efficiency rating post-credit scene. It's incredible.
What? So when he says, fine, I'll do it myself.
Fine. I'll do it myself.
Excellent. What is he talking about there? Is he talking about the destruction of Earth, which Ultron failed to do, or is he talking about getting an Infinity Stone, which Loki failed to do?
I think it's both. I think all this has been just one massive shit show for Thanos. Like, he keeps sending minions out. Yeah, so he's sending, like, he's been sitting in his chair, thinks he has a handle on things. He's been sending minions out that I'd like to think that this has all been part of his, like, manipulative plan in some way. And he's like, eventually all these stones are going to come to me because these minions are going to give them to me. I'll destroy the Earth. And then he's just like, screw it, you want something done right, you do it yourself.
And because I forgot to ask you very quickly, stay or go?
Yeah, it stays.
Stays?
Yeah,
it stays. Stays. Well, I'm going to stay, but also go. Thank you very much for listening, everyone. It's been a marvelous lunch break. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.